The episode you're about to listen to is from an unreleased episode of an earlier incarnation of the Away Team. These were Adam and I's first impressions of Star Trek Discovery back in 2017. There may be issues with events and future events within the show, but this hasn't been heard since it was deleted from the internet back in 2018. Sit back and enjoy.
Captain Archer of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
My name is Catherine Janeway.
Prune juice, chill.
Welcome to the Away Team, a Star Trek podcast. A podcast that is designed to comment and critique each episode of Star Trek in canonical order, with a bit of a twist.
Where was I on assignment? Did you even
I didn't even say. I just said you were on assignment. You know, so you whatever. Did you see that? I don't know. Did I send you the link? That solo trailer with Sabotage?
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. Somebody redid the solo trailer and put Sabotage. Works fucking perfectly.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
Somebody said, they go, okay, so if you're not using Sabotage in your trailer, that means your movie sucks. It's basically what it came down to.
Every trailer. Just do every trailer with Sabotage playing.
Star Trek Discovery Season 2. Sabotage! Like,
I want to see him do fucking movies that have no business having that. Like, The Piano. It's like, what the fuck?
That movie, Her. I'm like, okay.
Dance, I know you planned it.
You see the dude crying.
Yeah, I have to send you the link to that one. That is pretty funny. It's actually, I was like, going, actually, that makes it cooler.
You know? Come on, it's Sabotage.
Pretty soon it's going to be any Beastie song on there. You know, the new Spider-Man movie is going to have No Sleep Till Bennett Brooklyn. Oh, man. Welcome, everybody, to our Star Trek Discovery recap and review series of all new episodes of the CBS All Access series. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Back from on assignment.
Yes.
I was
actually on assignment at the Tesla Roadster. Jumped off just in time. Oh, shit.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. The whole SpaceX was to cover up the fact that Elon Musk drove his Roadster off the edge of the Earth. It was just to cover that up, because otherwise everybody else would have just seen that he rode it off the Earth, you know. So stupid.
He's just embarrassed.
So this is our season finale of the recap Star Trek series. From what I heard, they're going to start going into production this spring, so we'll probably get it maybe late this year, early next year. Orville is already casting for season 2, so that's a good one. So now we just don't know what to do with ourselves now that Star Trek and Orville are gone, and that's pretty much it. But you know how everybody always talks about, you know, particularly the old Star Trek series, Next Gen through Enterprise, was all full of technobabble, you know, and a lot of times, you know, there was so much technobabble that you could just really, you know, you figure it was probably something really scientific.
it sounds legit.
It seems legit, you know, because, you know, tachyons, you know, the because everything's a tachyon. So this one,
or a temporal wake,
right? A temporal wake, you know, which shields you from changes in timeline when you go back in time, because that's a real thing. So here's this comes from the Nerdist. I'm gonna read this to you real quick. Every iteration of Star Trek has the not so stellar episodes. A legendary cheesy hour of television that becomes a classic in its own way. For the original series, that episode was Spock's brain. In a group of space Amazons move the Vulcan's brain and use it to power their planet. For the Next Generation, it was the episode where Dr. Crusher has a steamy affair with an Irish space ghost.
Nope.
For Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Threshold is considered the hilarious what the fuck episode of the series. And now it's considered science. In the episode, Lieutenant Janeway and Captain Janeway and Lieutenant Tom Paris break their until now unbroken warp 10 barrier and then find themselves rapidly evolving into amphibian creatures who then go down to some planet and mate. Now, don't worry, they get better by the episode's end and keep on trekking, even if things are awkward on the bridge afterwards. According to space.com, we've now learned that an anonymous scientist going by the name of Biotrekkie was looking to show the world just how easy it is to completely phony story it into a well-known scientific journal if you shell out the right amount of money, even one that is supposedly peer-reviewed. The paper, which was named Rapid Genetic and Development Morphological Change Following Extreme Celeritry, was basically a retelling of the infamous episode with slightly different wording. Well, sometimes they use different wording. Our biotech Trekkie left in fake science terms like warp speed and other obvious clues like character names in hopes that someone calls his bluff, but no one did. It was ultimately accepted by no less than 4 different journals and actually published in one. American Research Journal of Biosciences and in some journals, as long as you pay a fee, you get in. So much for standards. The American Research Journal has now, of course, pulled the paper from their website ever since they got exposed. It seems even in the world of science publishing, the era of proper checks and balances has gone by the wayside. In an era where we hoped at least things like scientific journals could remain immune to the amount of disinformation running rampant in our culture, this is more than a little disappointing, even though the fact that it happens is still also kind of hilarious.
It's so fucking ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous, but it's great at the same time, exactly. Right? Like, you're just like, this is fucking dope.
I mean, if you're going to pull something, you pull it from Trek and then see if anybody catches it. Because it's, you know, as opposed to saying, like, you know, oh, this doesn't exist because of this. But you're just kind of like retelling a Star Trek episode.
Right.
And then you're just kind of like, nice. He's like, it's like Star Trek is still relevant, people. I'm just telling you that. That's basically the whole synopsis of the story.
I mean, when was it never not? You know what I mean? Like,
this is true. This is true.
Listen, Star Trek for life. Okay. Get it right.
Like in Black Panther, they have the hashtag Wakanda forever, hashtag Star Trek forever. So, final episode. Which is Take My Hand. Oh, Will You Take My Hand? So normally, you know, we do the walkthrough of the episode and then kind of discuss it. We found on IO9 a really ridiculous review of the episode by a Catherine Trendacosta. And the problem is that the reason I'm pulling this one is I think I've read a few different reviews from different episodes, and they all have the same smug, unintelligent, just
like I'm a piece of shit kind of feel to it.
Yeah, like somehow if you like this episode, you're
you're scum.
Yeah, but it's kind of like this what I'm trying to say is this very like technically like I really don't get Star Trek, but I'm going to use this whole highbrow shit to kind of poke at it. And so this particular person from Io9, I have the link in the show notes, Catherine, who spells Catherine with an A in there, Catherine, does a review, but obviously just doesn't get it. Like, it doesn't get, like, Star Trek.
You know what it sounded like? It sounded like a 90s cheerleader in high school going, I mean, like, are they in ships or something? Like, that's what it sounds like to me. And I know that's an incredibly sexist thing for me to say, but I also just don't fucking care. Right. Just want to put that out there. So.
Right. So we're gonna use her review to basically use to retell the story, but also just say why this review is shitty.
So we're gonna try to make her review useful in some way.
I know it's gonna be more useful through us than it is on its own, because pretty much everybody in the comment section basically just like was like, I liked it.
like what's wrong with you?
Yeah. So, Will You Take My Hand isn't bad. It's not. It's just not good either. And in some places, it does some unforgivable things. I will give it this. In a grand tradition of Star Trek, it slams the reset button with both fists and never stops winding back the clock. If you were wondering what the point of the season was, you're not alone. First of all, Star Trek doesn't hit the reset button at the end of every season. Obviously, she never saw Star Trek except for probably the original series.
Yeah, that statement right there made no sense to me. Yeah. Like, I was like, wait, what are we resetting?
obviously we forgot, you know, Best of Both Worlds, you know.
It's the best of both worlds. Oh, is that what we're
talking about? Yeah, that one. We open right where we left off, learning that apparently Lorca is the only person in the Mirror Universe who was ever capable or willing to actually go undercover in the Prime Universe. Giorgio does not hide her awfulness well at all. She demands that they call Kronos the enemy planet rather than the Klingon homeworld, as the latter denotes respect.
Did we expect her to hide it?
No.
She was the emperor.
Yeah.
She's not used to having to be coy.
Exactly. And, you know, and if you look at Lorca was the coup leader. So he knows how to do that. You know, right. Especially working for the Emperor for so long. It's like, oh my God, obviously you don't know how things work in the outside of, you know, your own bubble. She's told Discovery is running dark and responds with my favorite way to run, because she's a warrior captain, not a Starfleet captain. And then she engages in some casual psychological torture of Saru by asking if he's afraid. She says that back where she's from, they're saying scared Kelpian makes for tough Kelpian. Saru replies he's become so tough that many find him that many find it unpalatable, which I thought was a great subtlety. You know, going too. Back and forth, especially, you know, her first introduction.
Because no
was,
one in that, and you have to keep in mind, no one in the Prime Universe is going to assume that she is talking about eating him.
Right. And the only ones that know is, you know, Saru, Ash, and Michael, and obviously the Admiral and Sarek at this point. So it's like, you know, yeah, and you've just got that underlying playing back and forth.
It kind of sounds like she's only watched this episode.
I know, it does, doesn't it? Mirror Giorgio and Burnham have a big confrontation that feels like one of a million this episode. Well, that doesn't make sense. And it's hard to care because we all know where this is going, and Burnham's relationship with Giorgio went away as the pilot, as a plot point in episode four, and only to come back in when Mirror Giorgio did. This whole statement is completely bullshit, because if you saw more than this episode, because apparently the reviewer only saw this episode, she obviously, you know, there is a revelation that happens later in the episode, which is something that should have been revealed earlier, which I did agree with in this review. But the fact of the matter is you have. Nobody knew that Starfleet was going to put her in charge of the ship. And Burnham, who has spent her whole season trying to fulfill what Starfleet stands for, you know, it's like, it makes sense that she's going to, you know, she's going to stand up to Giorgio because she knows who she is.
Right.
You know, and but Michael has this misplaced kind of, I always thought that Michael has this kind of misplaced sense that Giorgio should owe her because she saved her life. But Giorgio's like, I was ready to die. Like, you know.
Well, I think too, I think that does exist too. But Michael also occasionally forgets this isn't the Giorgio that she knows.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is, I expected that. That's a common thing. Yeah. Like in Star Trek, like, oh, this person looks like this other person, so it reminds me of this other person. You know, it's it's just this episode. I was telling Steve before we started recording, this episode is the most Star Trek-y feel episode to me.
Yeah.
But also in the realm of the new movies.
Yeah.
In the way it's presented.
And the way,
you know, and that's not a bad thing.
No, the way it happens, and you know, like there's no lag time.
From right.
When it comes out to when it actually finishes. So it didn't build or evolve. So unlike with Tyler, a storyline I don't like, but can acknowledge the writers kept moving forward. I liked the whole thing with Tyler.
Yeah, I did too. But that's okay. That's just, she's not really being a bitch. She's just, that's her opinion. She doesn't like that storyline. Yeah. Okay.
Which, you know, pretty much for most of it, you know, don't agree with.
You're obviously fucking wrong. But I mean, you know, whatever. Right. That's you.
Like Jason Isaacs, Michelle Yeoh has a great time as a mirror character. Evil is fun, but like Lorca in his last episode, she is so clearly irredeemable that Burnham just looks like a fool. And I don't agree with that.
I don't either.
Because of the fact that she knows Starfleet's in a corner, and they want her to do to Kronos what she did in her universe. So to her, this is like, oh, I'm doing the same thing as I did before.
Right.
So, you know, no big deal. And it's true because, you know... Like she even got it to Sarek by, you know, using logic against him, you know. So Georgia decides to beat information about where some caves on Kronos are out of the still imprisoned Laurel, and we get the line, you require seasoning, as well as Laurel bringing up that the Klingons ate regular Giorgio. I really wish eating people wasn't a theme of the season, and I have no idea what the point is. Are the Klingons just like the Terrans? Did the starving Klingons need more than the mirror universe people? So should we have not had people eating in this show at all? Since it's just for shock value and serves only to demonize.
I think this hesitation is funny to me. Because she seems to think that Klingons view humans as people.
Right.
It's just another animal to them. They don't care. Just like Terrans are eating shrew and all that. It takes a higher level of a moral code.
Right.
To see the other. It's already, this shit's already been established. Like, you can put this together. The Klingons, what were they chanting in the first episode? It was like Klingons first, or
yeah,
you know, something like that. So obviously they don't think any other race is important.
Right.
You know, so why not eat a human? Who gives a fuck?
And then we have to use the word demonize. Like, Klingons aren't...
Because that's the favorite word.
Klingons aren't real people. Like, these aren't real. Like, you know, it's kind of like, you know...
Are we demonizing the Klingon race?
Because it's like
yeah.
Because at the same point, it's kind of like, yeah, like, Sulu only returned to Star Trek VI when he was in command of a starship. I'm not sure. Did George Takei know this wasn't real? Like, you
right.
know.
Like, it's like a lot of these people, they have only one lens to look through.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's kind of a shitty lens anyway. And then they're looking at all these different things that have nothing to do with each other.
It's like,
and trying to judge them all the same way.
It's like the, what was the space telescope that they sent up? With the wrong lens, the Hubble Space Telescope. You know, they sent it up with that shitty lens to begin with. That's what she's looking at through. She's not looking at through the new lens that they put in after the fact.
She's a separate game up.
Yeah. Anyway, Burnham's eventually able to remind Georgia that Tyler has all the same information as Laurel, but, you know, also wants to help rather than needing to be forced. Giorgio going for a blackout board in Evil Bingo calls Tyler it. Says he belongs somewhere, but and does all of this as he is if as if he's not even in the room. Right, because he's a Klingon. He's beneath her.
Yeah.
And, you know, Terrans are all about humans, so I'm not sure where you're failing to grab that. Tyler, for the most part, is making a sailing nod, and is the first thing he learned. He says it ties him to the past. When it's that literal, it's not a metaphor anymore, is it? Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, Tyler says the caves that they need to map the planet aren't, which aren't connected to the cave that the ship will jump into, are in a shielded shrine under land given to the Orions. Giorgio says the Orions in her world are pirates and slavers, and everybody and everyone has to be like, yeah, same here. Giorgio decides the group will release the drone, which we all know is a bomb, and it's honestly taking too long to get there. Will be her, Burnham, Tyler, and Tilly. When Tilly is the most emotionally stable person in the group, you should rethink things. Tilly bounds in, excited to work with Giorgio, she has somehow not realized until this point is a little off. She catches on quickly when Giorgio mentions how she subjugated Baze's Zed together and assumes for a casual girls' night out. This person is because at this point, the fact that she doesn't catch on to it, it's because Starfleet says she wasn't dead. Starfleet's not going to, you know, everybody's going to assume that's what happened. You know, yeah. She thought she was dead, but she's alive and cool. Everything's great. And it's just like, okay, why would
In the 23rd century, people trust their government.
Right.
So Starfleet says this is how it is. That's it. It's basically a military outfit.
Yeah.
In today's military, if your fucking commanding officer says this is how it is, you're not going to go, you know what? I think that's bullshit. Like, nah. You're going to be like, all right, she's alive. Cool. Right. Sounds good.
And this was actually one of the funniest pieces in the episode, because, you know, the fact is just, oh, well, it's a little off, and you know how, but it was designed for that. Like, she comes like, oh my god, I've wanted to. Then when she tells her that, and then she's like, oh, she's not. And then Tyler's like, no. And then she's like, oh, so she's, yeah. And then she goes and goes to try to do that Terran salute, and then Michael's like, don't do that.
Don't do that. That was funny as hell.
Yeah. I died. I was like, I laughed too hard at that, because she's like, oh, okay. And then she tries to do the salute, and then it's like, you know, no, don't do that. So Discovery jumps. Stamets gets one of his, like, two lines of the night. Am I good or what? And the landing party sets out to sell guns to some Orions. I would wear every single bit of their undercover clothing. Yeah, so she's emo. Because they're dressed in all black.
Yeah.
Except Tilly. Tilly looked pretty good in her outfit.
Tilly be looking good most times.
I know. I'm like going, oh, hey. So when the team lands on Kronos, Tilly's time in the Mirror Universe was not wasted, because she's pretty good at acting like an arms dealer. I like that, where she held the gun right up to that chick's head. Yeah. And also, I think Klingons have two dicks. Because, you know, there was a part where that Klingon was peeing against the wall, and there were like two streams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
It's like, I think I saw it and then was like, I don't want to.
I don't know. Why?
I'm cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I know. You're kind of like, I'm good. I'm good without that knowledge. That's in my.
There are certain things I don't need to know.
I felt like Thor in Ragnarok. Like, okay, now that's burned in my brain now.
Right.
So right up until she says she's hungry from all the arms dealing and drags Burnham away to tell her that she has her back. Like Saru, Tilly has benefited from not being in the spotlight. This scene shows that she's grown and is still fundamentally herself. She's one of the big characters that totally changed my perception of her from episode one.
Because I thought she was going to be annoying.
I know, same here. I thought she was just going to be annoying and just going to be like, why is she on there? But she's kind of been like, the weird part is like, she has been kind of like the stable ground in like everything. Like, you know, like some people say, well, she's us in there. It's like, yeah, but at the same point, she's also like the balance of everyone. Like with everything going on, you know, she's still kind of, she's the cadet, so she still reminds people of the Starfleet, you know, motto and all of that. I think that's kind of that grounding that they needed. And of course, comes from a cadet. You know, Giorgio says that then says, "We're not here for bread and circuses," which she goes, the line has no reference, makes no sense in context. But you know,
she's not here for food and games.
Yeah. Because
I think she was looking a little like I'll give her a point here, because I kind of agreed with her that it sounded like it should have been a catchphrase, but it really wasn't.
But it was it's a reference to an original Star Trek episode called.
See, Brother and I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And so, and she, you know, and she goes like, it just it doesn't make sense. It's a very clumsy shout out to the original series, which. It's like, you know, we don't have time for games. You know, it's like, okay, we're bread and circuses. So what?
But then also, too, even if you don't. Yeah, like you said, like, even if you don't get the. Just move the fuck on. Right. Like, it wasn't like it's like you need to know what bread and circuses means. I didn't know it was from. I have a lot of experience with Star Trek Next Gen and on. Right. You know, so when they reference shit from before that, I don't get it half of the time. And then Steve's like, "No, Adam, you dumb piece of shit. Okay. So, but I didn't know that. I moved on with this. It didn't ruin the fucking story for me. Right. Like, this chick need to calm it down, bro. Like,
so he goes, and hey, if we're talking about Orions, we must be talking about green women dancing. You know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but J.J. Abrams treated the obligatory Orion reference with more dignity in his movie than Discovery does here. It's a 1-2 punch of awful. First of all, the sexy dancing is clearly there to remind us that this isn't your father's Star Trek, just like the one episode used use of fuck and the full frontal nudity of Klingon nudity was. It's not that Star Trek can't curse or have nudity. It's that they didn't build a show where it's a shock for its own sake rather than world building. Second of all, Giorgio buys some time with Orion sex workers, both male and female, which then threatens with a gun for information after having sex with them. Of course, in a year of 2018, here we go, there is no excuse for Star Trek to decide the depraved bisexuality is a trope worth including.
That's my problem, though, is like, so since it's 2018, is depravity no longer exist? That's right. Not a thing anymore?
No, because they're tying it to the fact that, oh, because she's bisexual, she has to be depraved.
Listen. And then another thing, too. When I saw that there was Orion's sex workers and those are the Orions.
Right.
That's canon.
If you've actually watched more Star Trek than just this episode.
Right.
And not used Wikipedia, you would understand that.
That's Orion. The sexiest Orion girls I've ever seen were on fucking Enterprise.
I mean, there was that that green Orion and J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, she was fine, too. She was
fine, too, yeah. And third of all, this guy, who, fun fact, is played by Clint Howard, who made an appearance in the original Star Trek, playing Baylock in the Corbinite Maneuver when he was a child. Does he have a thick accent, even though other Orions don't? Yes. Yes, it's this. Down to the music. Meant to be an opium den? Yes. Is this character a number of tropes right down to the Yellow Peril playbook? Yes. It is basically the spitting image of Mickey Rooney's yellow face in Breakfast at Tiffany's, only green. Also, yes. This is infuriating. All of this is pretty much par for the course for Discovery, which has paid lip service to exploring and developing the period right before the new original series, but has completely failed to do so. The Klingons, as represented in this show, don't have depth and barely spend any time on the war from their side other than in ways that present them as backstabbing power grabbers. Tyler, Volk, and Laurel wasn't presented as honorable examples of them all, other than extremists. Here it is. This is the one I know you really want to get onto. Similar, you can't include Orions in a show in 2018 the same way a show from 1969 does. If they had come to Kronos and happened to encounter some Orions, that would be an Easter egg. Instead, the show goes just goes ahead with, oh yeah, a whole race of drug peddlers, slavers, and pirates, pointing it out, failing to interrogate it, and adding a new layer that 1969 didn't have. I mean, I may be wrong, you are, but I do not remember the particular flavor of fear of Asian-based racism tingling in the Orions in the original series, even if there was. Discovery shouldn't continue it.
First of all, the only one who brought up Asians was her.
Right.
I don't know what the fuck she's eating. We were both just like, what is she talking about? Because I guess the only pirates that exist are Asian pirates. Is that what you're saying? You're a little racist. I don't appreciate that shit. Okay. Yeah. But my big thing, one thing that shoots out at me is when she's like, why does he have an accent but none of the other Orions do? So you're telling me that humanity has one accent,
right?
Like, what the fuck? And then we already established that the that little fucking area that they're in, that's not the Orion homeworld,
right?
So they all move there. So of course there's people of different dialects, different whatever from the planet. So why don't you step your fucking game up? But that Asian thing was weird. I get what she meant. Because there, you know, there was a lot of pirating in
Asia.
Why
does it have to be an opium den? What about, like, you know, what do we have now? We have those little hookah bars and stuff like that. It's like, couldn't, you know, it could have been an amalgamation of those. I mean, you know.
But yeah, that's another thing, too. Like, so people are doing drugs, so now it's instantly an opium den. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it looks like a strip club where a lot of bad shit be going on.
Right.
You know, so it's this chick is doing what most people do nowadays, and I can almost guess that she's probably in her 20s. She's looking for things and not finding them, so she's creating them in her head. Not on purpose. It's just the way she looks at life. There's has to be these problems here because the world is shit. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right. So Discovery does this a lot, by the way. There's a constant feeling like someone has just realized they never explained something, so a line or two is added out of nowhere that just draws attention to the problem. While Tilly's getting high and Giorgio is having sex, Tyler and Burnham are trying to find a cave location of some other Klingons who are playing what is basically craps, but is, of course, called Obliterate Them in Klingon. Because it's fucking Klingons. It's like, Jesus, you can't do a culture because you have to stay PC. Is that really what we're getting
to? I'm sorry. This is the Obliterate Them, the game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't we have a game called War?
Yeah, right.
Like, We also have Risk. Let's get it to fucking gather, please. Like, everything she makes is reaching so far that she's about to fall over. Like, it's just so stupid.
Tyler,
the most peaceful fucking society on the planet, and none of this other stuff makes sense.
I know. She's acting like, you know, we're already at the 24th century level. No, we're not even at the 23rd century level.
No, honey.
Tyler actually seems to let go of his depression for a second while playing the game, while the sound of laughing Klingons makes Burnham run outside. Actually, I kind of dug that scene where he started to, like, when he started talking. I don't know. There's something about him talking Klingon that's just very commanding, you know. When, you know,
I think because his voice is he says it slowly and deliberately. Yeah. Like, most of the times when we've heard Klingon, it's real quick,
right?
And it's usually only a phrase, but when he's speaking it,
yeah,
like a conversation, you know. So it does grab you a little bit. But then I think his because then after, so Michael walks out, when Michael walked out or whatever, his explanation of why the Klingons were getting so rowdy was perfect. It's like, yeah, because it's a human speaking Klingon. I'm like a fucking oddity to them.
Yeah,
they think it's cute.
It's like for us hearing a a black person with a speaking German. It's kind of like one of those, like, what?
You know? Yeah, just for a second, it makes you stop. You're like, huh?
It makes you like, wait, what? What happened here? So in a scene that is good, but I wish it we'd gotten earlier, so that we better understood Burnham's actions on the Shinzo. This I agreed with. Burnham described what it was like hearing her parents being murdered by Klingons. This was a scene we needed earlier in the series because while everyone kept saying that it was ironic that Burnham fell in love with a had fallen for a Klingon, we'd never really understood the depth of her trauma there. We got a lot more about her feelings surrounding her foster father than what we survived before he took her in. I agree with that.
I do too.
Because
we should have known about this sooner.
Yeah, this should have happened in the beginning. Like at least that scene when Lorca invites her onto Discovery. Like, you know, why she did what she did. Maybe an explanation as Lorca. Like, so
because they basically what they did is they basically gave her a grudge, much like Kirk had.
Right.
With the Klingons, and there was a specific reason for it, you know, but they never explained it. So I remember in the first episode, why is she so fucking on the Klingons' ass right now?
Yeah,
there was a piece that we didn't have, yeah. You know what I mean?
So Tilly,
other than they were, you know, trying to obliterate the Federation.
right. And that she was willing to overtake Giorgio to do that. You're kind of like, whoa, what the hell? What's going on here? So Tilly discovers that she's got a bomb and not a drone, but tells Burnham, but Giorgio takes it and runs off. Burnham twigs that this isn't Giorgio going rogue, but a sanctioned Starfleet action. Now, I will flat out say I was wrong. I expected the show to do something radical, to have another mutiny, but this time the whole crew behind it to save Starfleet from itself, to behold its values. If the Discovery mutinied, save the Federation from Klingons and itself, and then headed out to explore as an independent ship, fleeing the Federation, that would explain a lot. It would explain why Spock never mentions his sister, now a persona non grata than before. It would explain why no one ever mentions the spore drive again. It would explain a lot. No.
Not really.
Yeah, because, you know, Spock had a brother and that didn't appear until Star Trek V. You know? It's.
I think this woman doesn't understand basic storytelling, and I'm not even trying to insult her in that way, but I noticed that when you and I we watch a lot of fiction,
right?
And there's certain leases that you give fiction that you realize that you're looking into a world that you don't know everything about,
right?
You know, I noticed that people who only read poetry or like philosophical works and stuff like that, which are definitely great things to consume yourself with, don't understand the nuances of fiction.
Well, I think,
and they do shit
I think sometimes they don't really understand the nuance of narrative.
Exactly. Yeah, narrative's a better word than fiction. I think it's – and Steve and I both have experience in it anyway in different – for different reasons, but I mean you can think of an episode of Star Trek and really break it down to its core fucking parts, and everything makes sense.
Listen to all our previous episodes of the Away Team.
Right. I mean, there's certain things that are being built up. There's certain things that aren't really. It's not important for you to have every little detail.
Yeah.
There's reasons why things are the way they are. They're not just doing them to shock you. They're not just doing them to be whatever. It's just weird to me how inept she is on how this works.
Yeah.
And that's why I said in the beginning, it's like she's only watched this episode of Star Trek, not of Discovery. Like, she has no idea what the hell she's watching.
And any references to anything, it probably sounds like it comes from Wikipedia. The big thing that I have with this, and you know, it's the fact that at what point did everybody decide we needed to know everything right then and there? You introduce a culture, we have to know everything about it. That didn't happen in any of the narratives before. These species would come out. We only needed to know what we needed to know for the narrative and then moved on. But it's like, you know, somehow we have to. Well, how do they feel? Did they, you know, it's, you know, what was it? Patrick and I were joking around and saying, like, excuse me, is this water field fed? Did it get along with the other water around it? Like, you know, we needed to know, like, you know, was it treated well before we consumed it? Like, that matters, you know?
Well, it reminds me of a recent conversation with my children. So we were having our, you know, a D&D Dungeon Dragon session, and my daughter Ava is the question one. She always wants to meta, you know, and ask me things about what's going on. And she finally got to a part where I'm like, "You don't know that," and she goes, "I know I don't know that. That's why I'm asking you." And I go, "No. You don't understand. Your character would not know that,
right.
So I can't tell you that." And she, it kind of clicked in her head that she is not privy to all of the information of what's going on. She has to figure it out. So I had to tell her. She's like, "Well, I want to know that now." And I said, "Well, then your character needs to find someone who knows that and ask them." And she's like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Like it made sense. You
like,
know what I mean?
Like there's this thing where suddenly we have to be told instead of us figuring it out.
It's that hand-holding bullshit. You know, if every story was told where you gave me every piece of information in the beginning, it'd be boring as shit.
Yeah.
I'd be like, man, there's no reason to watch if I already know what's going to happen. It kind of makes you think, how does God feel? It was really bored.
Yeah, exactly. Because you think about it and you're like, well, then there's no twist. There's no discovery. No pun intended.
That's why God gave humanity free will. Exactly. So there was a twist.
As Al Pacino said in The Devil's Advocate, free will. You know, what he said? He goes, "It's a bitch."
Yeah.
This is not so go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It's just this it's as I read this and I was just kind of mad. I'm like, "Oh, this chick's a bitch." But as I read it now, it's as if it's someone who has no interest in sci-fi or fantasy or Star Trek or anything.
Like she
has
was now suddenly,
right? Has now suddenly watched an episode and is like, "Oh, what the fuck is this?"
Yeah.
Like she doesn't understand core things. It's really weird.
So that's not what Discovery went with. Discovery, for all its fucks, boobs, and blood, is far more atypical Star Trek show than it advertised itself as. I don't think it advertised itself as different.
No.
I
think a few of the actors said that.
Yeah.
They said this is a different kind of Star Trek, but they never advertised itself as that.
Yeah. What happens is that Burnham gives a speech and convinces Starfleet to change its mind. End of story. I think, you know, she's really dismissive of that part because she goes back, finds out that Starfleet had actually sanctioned this thing. And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And the story kind of handles it very quickly, and the reviewer of this is very dismissive of that, but it's like, yeah, but that's a huge deal because you know anybody that knows Star Trek is like, "Oh, whoa, Starfleet sanctioned that?" Like, you know, that's
because it goes, and it's exactly what Michael said, it goes against the core values of the Federation. And then it also made even more of an impact because we just got back from seeing how the Terrans were.
Right.
And we're like, "Oh, is that the road we're taking now?"
Yeah.
Because shit's hit the fan. Like, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Like it was such a layered decision.
And then the fact that they were talking about mutiny and Saru, who hated Michael for what she had done with the mutiny and stuff like that, stood up with her.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't fault Discovery for character building. I'll tell you that much right now, because it's been superb.
Saru is one of my favorite characters.
I love Saru, dude. That's the homie.
He is, dude. Even when he walks, you know, he has that different walk, but it's like a strut.
I kind of figured it out. I think they're trying. It's almost like he walks like a fish.
Right.
In water. Like kind of like he's swaying in the water.
Oh, right.
I'd be interested to see the background history of that species other than slaves.
Right. And the delicacy.
Because I think that wasn't – I don't think that species has been in the other shows at all.
No, it hasn't. Burnham gives Giorgio her freedom in exchange for control of the control. And Giorgio wildly takes too long to make the exchange. Since I'd expect her not to really care what happens to anyone but herself – and she gets what she wants. Burnham says, you are really nothing like my Giorgio and the mirror Giorgio. And the whole audience yells, "No kidding." Yeah. I liked seeing Giorgio.
Why you no understand that thing?
You know, the exchange between them. My favorite part was when she's like, "And I'm doing it for you." She's like, "I don't buy it. So it was worth a try." You know, because she, you know,
right.
It was worth a shot. You know, it's like, because that was the whole thing. You know, she wants to destroy the Klingons. That's her nature.
I laughed so hard. She's like, She's pointing the gun. It's all tense, and she just goes, whatever.
Yeah. Because in the end, it's not worth it. You know, it's like, right. You know, they're willing to give me what I want. They want to go on with it. Fine. Let them deal with it. You know, yeah. But, you know, and then we're, you know, I mean, see, I like Michelle Yeoh as Evil Giorgio. She just has a lot of fun with it. And I just like the whole fact that, you know, she was like, I'm doing this for you. She's like, no, don't buy it. Well, it was worth a shot.
it's even better, too, that it is her. She's such a serious actress. And yeah. I don't mean that in a bad way. I love her work. Like, she's such a great actress. It's physically and in the, you know, in I don't know, narratively. but it was cool to see her kind of, you know, let her hair down, so to speak, a little bit in a right. couple of these scenes. And I think it's a real shame that this crockety ass bitch don't understand what's going on.
Right. And it goes on to say, like, it is annoying that it took Burnham this long to figure out to figure this out, and B, it's not even that emotional a final realization to her for her.
It's annoying.
But it's like she got it, and she's already kind of dealt with it because she knew she made a gamble and it didn't pay out.
Yeah.
So
what's the problem?
The bomb is given to Laurel so she can use the threat of wiping out Kronos to put herself in charge and bring about the grand Klingon unification that T'Kuvma wanted. Tyler goes with her. Burnham is.
That's why he's got that smooth sound. T'Kuvma. Yeah. Like, he's got that kind of smooth sound to it.
And that whole scene between Ash and Burnham, you know, when he tells her that he's going to go. And in the end, I was like, you know, it makes sense because he knows he doesn't have a future with Starfleet.
Right.
And, you know, it's like he may be able to help because Laurel knows that that's Valk, you know. So and it fits his name because he's, you know, son of no one. Remember, he was like, mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I might as well go back there because, you know, maybe I can be of some use. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens, you know, next season. Burnham is pardoned and gets her rank back. Throughout the episode, there's been a Burnham voiceover about a new soldier and an admiral discussing fear on the eve of battle. It's trite, not unlike when Burnham recited Alice in Wonderland. Oh, so many episodes ago. It turns out Burnham is giving a speech at a ceremony where the crew is getting medals of honor. Burnham says that the Federation planets have all completed an odyssey out of darkness into the light. So too have the Klingons. The war is over. I shudder at the reminder of Into Darkness.
There's been so many speeches in Star Trek history.
I mean,
like, that's another common Star Trek thing to end on a high note, a positive note.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
but go back
to watching fucking whatever the heck, Gilmore Girls and Sex in the City or whatever the hell you were watching.
The thing with this one is that it annoys me because of the fact that she glosses over a lot of the big things, like
right.
The fact that she runs into her mom in Paris and it's Sarek giving her back her rank, you know, because, you know, he was like, he asked Starfleet for that.
Yeah, those are kind of big deals.
Yeah, they're emotional human moments, you know. And it's funny too because I've noticed with Michael is Michael's starting to kind of embrace her humanity. Because have you noticed that since, you know, coming back, she's less and less Vulcan. She utilizes it when she needs to.
After I saw Michael in that sleepwear, she can embrace my humanity. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
No, she definitely agree with what you're saying. Like, and that's the thing is the character progression in this show has been some of the greatest I've ever seen in modern times. Like, it's if you go back after we've seen the whole thing, go watch the. I'm very interested in watching the first episode again because it's going to be completely different fucking people. But the progression to who they are now was so steady.
Right.
That you didn't even really notice it until you start thinking about it. Right. You know what I mean? But it wasn't like there was an episode where it's like, oh, that's not what he would do or blah, blah, blah. You know, it was just fluid, man. You know, it was impressive. Impressive.
So I'm gonna skip past the rest of it because the episode is pretty much over. Everybody gets a Medal of Honor, including Stamets's mate, you know, partner, I guess.
Who was
killed, which I thought was cool. I was like, oh,
that was cool.
I was like, oh, cool. There's assorted musings that they put at the that she put at the bottom. She says, "What does Saru have to do to get promoted?" I mean, seriously, that you kind of like, dude. He, you know, he brought Discovery back from the, you know, you know, back from the mirror universe and all of that, and he's made good decisions. It's like, yeah, you know what? He kind of deserves to get promoted.
Saru is the one who developed into the coolest fucking character because. Yeah. His race is submissive.
Very.
Like, he was like, fuck you, bitches. I'm about that life. I think he only made one mistake, one big mistake, and that was when he
joined that race. Remember when they were trying to do that message thing? And he kind of – there was that one episode where him, Burnham, and Ash went down to the planet. They were going to try to use that planet's
– Oh, I forgot about that one because that's my least favorite episode.
Yeah.
Where he told Tilly to turn off the machine
because
she was using the spore machine to fix him, and he was being impatient. He was like, no, he's gonna die. Like, that was a mistake, but it was I probably would have did the same thing. Like, Tilly, you about to fuck shit up. But
and then
I love that dude.
But then, of course, you know, They go off. They're heading back to Vulcan. Saru's in command until they get to Vulcan, which they're going to pick up their new captain. And Sarak is on Discovery to head to Vulcan. And then they get a distress signal. And you know, they're like, it's you know, they go, it's Starfleet. There's a Starfleet code, but it's, you know, it's hard to make out. And then of course you see like the registry NCC-17. And then it's like, you know, what is
they're trying to be cute, you know what I mean?
And then they're like, it's Captain Pike. And then, of course, in case you didn't get that, Michael has to go, this is the USS Enterprise. And I was like, really? We had to say it, though?
No, you know, there's a few people that if you say Captain Pike, they're not going to know.
You're right. You know,
yeah,
I would have been, it would have been cool if they used Captain Robert April.
Oh shit.
That's a throwback. They were reaching.
You got to know your shit to know your shit at this point. I would have been tripping.
I would have been me out of the chair like, wah! Boom.
Just running in circles in your living room. My dad back.
You know, it's like that gif of those black kids are like, ah! You know? That would... and then, of course... comes out of warp. It's the Enterprise that comes up, a little modified, but comes up and meets head on into Discovery. And of course, you get the bop, 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 bop. I'm like going, yeah.
And they kept that going for the credits.
Yeah, and then like, you had the end credits of the classic Star Trek theme, which I do give her credit for because she says, "Did I stay and listen to the original Star Trek theme play over the end credits?" Absolutely.
So I'm going to say this. I said some mean things for comedy and also because she was annoying me. But I do feel like this is someone, and I know it's such a cop-out thing to say, but she just didn't get it, right? But like legit, like it just seemed like this isn't her cup of tea, and you got to drink the tea you enjoy.
You're right. Okay?
Like, if you're not going to enjoy it.
Earl Grey, preferably.
Earl Grey, hot. Okay, I just had that this morning. So,
overall, season wise, evaluating, thinking about the whole season, what do you got?
I really enjoyed it. There was only one episode that I didn't. I kind of was whatever about, and that was that one with the planet and Saru went fucking batty.
Right.
Like that was the only one that I was kind of like, you know. The story progression was great. Character progression was great. I do feel this last episode felt a little rushed. Felt like they could have broke this into a two-parter. And did a little bit more, especially on Kronos, because we've spent so little time on Kronos in all of Star Trek. But it leaves me really wanting to see next season. I want to see what happens, how the war is going to cool and the Federation has to rebuild at this point. I mean, they've destroyed almost everything. It's going to be interesting. I really think, And I also want to see what was wrong with the Enterprise. That's been bugging me too. Like, wait a minute. Comms were down. Like, what's happening?
We expected at the end to go, tut, 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 tut.
I'll tell you what. I'll be pissed off if episode one happens and they pretend like they didn't see the Enterprise.
Right? Bruh. It's 6 months after, you know?
Don't you fucking do that.
Don't do that shit to me. Yeah, I mean, overall, the season was a little uneven because, you know, before the break, we had all of this, you know, we had the war and then we had the Harry Mudd episodes, which I thought were the best, the highlight of the season.
Yeah, they were real good.
The highlight of the season, especially anytime you're doing a time loop, I'm in for a time loop.
It was so well done, too.
Yeah. And, you know, and we had kind of these episodes and we, you know, and I think they did a good job at kind of creating this. What the fuck is Lorca about? And then.
Yeah, we really did for every episode.
Yeah.
Lorca felt off. Like, they did that perfectly. I never felt comfortable with him there.
Yeah.
Like, I liked him for a little bit and stuff he was doing, but I never felt like he was supposed to be there. Something was wrong with him.
Right.
You know, and because he wasn't in that supposed to be in the universe.
Exactly.
Like, they did it fucking perfectly.
And, you know, and
it's like when you're wearing a miss, like two different socks.
Oh, right.
And you're kind of like, I mean, I'm wearing socks, but something ain't right on the right foot. I just don't feel it's right.
Yeah. But then after the break, it felt fluid. You know, the mirror universe and then coming right back and trying to resolute. I think, yeah, they could have done a little bit more with coming back, finding out what's going on, and then maybe having kind of a little space battle here and there, you know, maybe, you know, some kind of minor offensive, you know, like Starfleet holding up against Earth and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought we could have had a little more action in that aspect, but you know, I don't know. They may have run the budget down on the mirror episodes that they kind of had to like chill for a bit. I think it was a little rushed. I could see how some people might say there was less of an impact in the finale. You know, if you're used to Star Trek, if you've watched Star Trek, you know, a lot of people have said a lot of reviewers have said oh, this is, you know, ended with a whimper and blah, blah, blah. I think because of the fact that you kind of created this, oh, it's a different type of Star Trek. You didn't expect it to still have a very Star Trek kind of feel to it at the end. And it really was that Starfleet lost its way and then it came back and it was trying to figure out what, you know, Starfleet's about. So, you know, to me, it held true. I did enjoy, I think now looking back on everything, there were a lot of episodes that I did enjoy, some that felt weak. But given how a lot of other first seasons, i.e. Next Gen, i.e. DS9, i.e. Voyager, this is the best first season since original series.
I could definitely say, and Next Generation is my favorite television show ever. And I liked the first season of Discovery more than I liked the first season of fucking Next Gen.
Listen back to all our past episodes about that. You'll be able to see.
Like, it holds a special place in my heart, obviously.
Right.
But I don't, like, I liked it when I was a kid.
Revisiting them haven't been so great, you know?
Like, I don't know. Not at all.
Oh, rape gangs again? Really?
Oh, Jesus. Can this bitch get off the fucking screen, please?
Ain't you dead yet?
God damn.
But yeah, I mean, to be honest, if you've rage quit, I do feel bad for people that rage quit. Because I could see points.
There were points where I could see people who weren't hardcore about it would go, oh, I'm not, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And there were points where I was that way. I was like, this is just like, this is not going anywhere.
Not me.
And
I was on board the whole time.
But you got more on board once we hit the mirror universe.
I did get a little more excited, but I was like, I'm going to at least watch this season.
That's like if I was like, okay, you know, we're doing the recaps, that kind of really kept me watching, but I'm glad I stuck with it. Because I thought they had a lot of great shiny moments, a lot of characters, unlike some of the past series, you know, of Star Trek, grew on me to where I liked them a lot. Saru, I wasn't sure about that dude, but I did have respect for him because of, you know, when Burnham first came on Discovery, and you're like going, oh, you know, he's cool to be able to put some of that stuff behind. He still has a lingering doubt about her. But then later he was like, I'm not leaving you behind, Burnham. We're all going home, you know? And then, you know, him standing up with Burnham against, you know, Starfleet orders. So, you know, and Tilly, you know, kind of got to think for Tilly.
Can get it.
Got to think for Tilly. Really dug Ash. I really hate to see him, you know, not be part of the core crew because I really liked Ash. You know, and Stamets.
I didn't like Ash at first. I'm going to be real with you.
Yeah.
Like the first episode he was in, I was like, this guy's going to be annoying because they didn't really give you much info at first. So it was just, he was just a soldier dude. And I was like, you know, but then after that, I was like, oh, okay. Like this dude's pretty cool.
They really fleshed him out. So, but yeah, so I really think, if you haven't checked it out, go back and check it out. If you rage quit, give it a look, see, finish it out, and then, you know, hit us up. Let us know what you thought about it. So I'll just go ahead and read the.
Jesus, my fucking wife is so annoying. She'll nonstop call until I answer the phone. Let me just turn this down. She can fucking wait. I will start reading it. Okay. That is it for this week, motherfuckers.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what I'm doing, you have two ways to help out. One, you can make a one-time donation to make this show self-sustaining, or simply feed my pets, either through PayPal, Cash App, or Venmo. Check the show notes for details and links. Or two, you can share us on social media or review us on Apple Podcasts. This will make the algorithm gods promote our show to an unsuspecting public. You can also stalk me on Facebook, facebook.com/thelazygeeks1010. On all our other socials, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, and TikTok, @TheLazyGeeks. If you're old school, email me at themailbag@thelazygeeks.com. And if you want to read some news, blogs, or some of my other podcast content, check out the blog at thelazygeeks.com. So that's it for me this week. So until next time, to beam up.